National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today we present the second of two conversations with outstanding public figures. Our guest is the Honorable Gideon Raphael, permanent representative of Israel to the United Nations. Ambassador Raphael will be interviewed by Ruth Sussman, formerly of the news department of Kol Yisroel, and presently with the Jewish Theological Seminary of America.
Ambassador Raphael, your new post as Israel's ambassador to the United Nations is not your first official connection with that organization, is it?
No, I came for the first time to the United Nations in 1947 when the United Nations decided the future of the Jewish aspirations and the establishment of an independent Jewish state.
In other words, you were a representative to the United Nations from Israel even before there was an Israel.
I was a member of the Jewish Agency delegation at that time.
Then you have been affiliated with the United Nations practically since its beginning and since the beginning of the State of Israel, sir.
Yes, I have attended most of the General Assemblies and other meetings of the United Nations and sessions and Security Council meetings. Not during all of these years, but most of the years from 1947, when the State of Israel was established, I was appointed member of the Permanent Delegation of Israel and stayed here from 1947 until 1953 as counsel of the delegation and then as Mr. Abiyibin's alternate representative.
Ambassador Raphael, where were you on the day that Israel declared its independence, that is on May 15, 1948? Were you in Israel at the time, or were you here with the United Nations in New York?
I was in Israel. I attended the ceremony at the Tel Aviv Museum when the state was proclaimed, independence of Israel was proclaimed by Mr. Ben-Gurion. And then that same evening, we opened up the new foreign ministry under the leadership of Mr. Moshe Sharet. That was on the 14th of May in the evening. And from these days on, I'm connected with the Foreign Service of Israel.
So I guess that was one of the best happy memories of your life then, wasn't it, sir?
Well, it was a very, very great day, and I'm certainly happy that I had the chance to be present when the independence of Israel was proclaimed.
But I guess the joy was short-lived because almost immediately after its proclamation of independence, Israel found itself at war.
Yes, the next morning on the 15th of May, I remember very well, we were greeted by Egyptian planes which bombed Tel Aviv as a kind of salute to the independence of the new state. The Egyptian and other Arab armies invaded the state of Israel that very day. And from that day on, we had these troubled times, which had culminated in recent events again.
Mm-hmm. Ambassador Raphael, to get back to you, sir, and your work with the United Nations, in 1965 and in 1966, you were, I believe, a representative to the 18 Nations Disarmament Committee in Geneva.
Yes, I represented Israel in Geneva, the United Nations headquarters and international organizations, for a short while. And while I was in Geneva, I followed very closely the disarmament negotiations. I was connected with work on disarmament. During all these years, I attended the General Assembly sessions and represented Israel on discussions on disarmament. The question of disarmament is a matter of very high priority and very great concern to Israel. We ourselves have become a victim of an armaments race which was imposed upon us by outside forces, and present situation and previous situation, we are perhaps the very result of that unlimited armaments race. We hope that in the light of the recent developments and the experiences of the last few weeks, that a new start may be made in that field too, and that the people of our area have learned the lesson from accumulating armaments, which only have created that situation which resulted in the outbreak of hostilities.
Mm-hmm. But the world's quest for peace, as we know, sir, didn't begin with the United Nations. Doesn't it go back even to biblical times?
Well, I think the first disarmament program was presented by Prophet Isaiah. And the very evidence of that you can find at the United Nations Plaza, where the famous saying of Isaiah is engraved in stone, that nation shall not lift sword against nation. That saying of Prophet Isaiah is not only engraved in stone in the United Nations, but it is engraved in the hearts and memories of the Jewish people for times immemorial.
Ambassador Raphael, the connection between Israel and the newly independent African nations is most interesting. You were personally involved, weren't you, sir, in establishing some of Israel's African relations?
Well, in a modest way, only I paid some visits to African countries, but it was not exactly in the province of my main preoccupations. I remember that I visited the Congo, which is now the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kinshasa, in 1959, before the independence of that country, and returned later in 1960 to represent Israel when independence of that country was proclaimed. At that same time, I visited a number of other African states, and was deeply impressed with the vitality of these countries, their great needs, and their desire to catch up with modern progress. And I always enjoyed very much these contacts because we formed quite a close affinity of thought and emotion among people of African countries and the Israel people. I think we share a common experience of, of suffering, differing ways of suffering, of discrimination which is no fault of the man, but is the people, but which is imposed from by outside forces.
I believe, Ambassador Raphael, that the Africans are well aware of the remarkable progress that Israel has made in many areas, in government, science, agriculture, and economics. And so they send many students to Israel, isn't that so?
Yes, they do so. I think we have trained in Israel, I think, more than 9,000 African students over the years. We have sent teams of instructors to most of the new nations, not only to Africa, as a matter of fact, but also to Asian countries. And we have close relations of cooperation, economic cooperation and development cooperation with Latin American countries. But it's correct that the main effort was oriented towards Africa. I believe it is easier for them to grasp what we are doing in a small country than for them to understand the highly developed technology, and which expresses itself in very large dimensions in the industrial countries. I remember very well when I was, I think it was still in Belgium, when African representatives came to me and wanted to know what we could do for them to assist them in their development programs. And I asked one of them, a man who became a prominent leader later in his independent country, why do you turn to Israel? Well, he said, look, Israel is for us like a small carpet. We can see the beginning of the weaving, we can see the end of the weaving, and we can discern the pattern. We come to a great country or to a highly developed country, we don't see the beginning, we don't see the end, and we don't see the manufacture of the whole development scheme. Therefore, we prefer to be with you and to study on the spot in Israel. But not only that, I think the very zeal of the Israelis to develop their country, their ardor which they develop, is somehow infectious. We are building a nation, and at the same time we have to rebuild nature. And to do these things is apparently an exhilarating experience for others to watch and for others to learn from.
A final question about Africa, sir. When the African students come to Israel, don't they have a language problem?
Well, they have French-speaking Africans, they have English-speaking Africans, of course they have their own languages, great multitude of languages. So what we are doing is we are teaching them Hebrew, which becomes for them a common language. I remember an instance which was told to me by our foreign minister when he once visited Leopoldville. He was sitting, I think, in the lobby of a hotel, and two Africans were trying to discuss or to argue a certain point. One was speaking French, the other one was speaking English, and they turned to Mr. Even and asked him, "Sir, do you speak English and French? Would you help us to translate, be our translator?" He agreed gladly, and soon he realized that these two gentlemen were discussing a problem which was connected in Israel. And one asked the other, "Have you been to Israel?" He said, "Of course I've been to Israel." And the other said, "Have you been?" "Of course, naturally." So one said, "Well, have you learned Hebrew?" "Of course," he said, "I've learned Hebrew." So the other one said, "Well, why don't we speak Hebrew?" And that was the end of Mr. Even's career as interpreter, because these two gentlemen then could easily and friendly converse in the lingua franca, Hebrew.
Ambassador Raphael, it seems amazing that tiny Israel, with such widespread diplomatic relations, has been able to recruit and train enough diplomats and foreign service officers to man its many posts. Israel is still a relatively young country. Where in the world did Israel get and develop all of its diplomats and foreign mission officers?
I could answer with a question. Where does Israel recruit all these wonderful pilots and these great soldiers they have, and the farmers we have? All those come from a nation which never been prominent in the field of aviation or in agriculture. We haven't been prominent in that field since our expulsion from that country 2,000 years ago. We were driven into exile. But we have produced farmers, and we have trained the pilots, and I think they have shown that they are of good mettle. And we had also the human material available to train the diplomats. I would say that we have not taken the diplomats just from diplomatic schools and only from universities and after long training courses. I was asked that same question that you asked me a couple of years ago by the late Prime Minister of India, Mr. Nehru, and he expressed his admiration for the fact that we had established diplomatic relations with so many countries. A small country like Israel had by that time relations with about 72 countries in the world. But now we have relations with nearly 100 countries in the world. And he asked me, "Where do you find all that diplomatic personnel?" Well, my first answer was, "Mr. Prime Minister, whenever India is ready to establish diplomatic relations, don't worry. We have a whole diplomatic staff ready, from the ambassador on to the last secretary, which are ready to depart on the spot and to come to India. But apart from that, we are taking our people from behind the plow and from the university, from teaching. And as same as we have a citizens' army, we have a citizens' diplomatic corps."
Speaking of taking people from behind the plow, sir, didn't I read that you yourself were once a tractor driver on a kibbutz?
Yes, that would mean I was in front of the plow.
In front of the plow, that's right.
Certainly I was. It was long before World War II. I was asked to undertake certain missions for Haganah, mainly in the field what was known at that time illegal immigration. It was not illegal because we had the right to immigrate. It was illegal because the British authorities had barred the entry of Jews in great numbers to the country. So in view of the great plight of the Jews in Europe, the beginning of the Hitler period, we had to organize our own means and ways of Aliyah, of immigration. into our country.
You're not a Sabra. That is, you were not born in Israel or what was then Palestine, were you?
No, I was born 54 years ago in Berlin. And I came to Israel early in 1934. I had left Berlin at the beginning of the Hitler period. I went to France to organize training centers for Chalutzim, for pioneer youth, which went to Israel, and myself, I undertook agricultural training there. And then when I came to Israel in 34, I joined the kibbutz. As a matter of fact, I was a member of a group which later established the kibbutz and the settlement in Emek Israel.
Ambassador Raphael, was one of the reasons you left Germany in 1933 the rise of Hitler and Nazism?
It certainly was connected, because that was the beginning of the Nazi period, and we didn't see any future to remain in Europe. As a matter of fact, we were always educated as youngsters already in concepts of Zionism. And Zionism meant in our times, and I hope it will mean it again, to go up to Eretz Israel and to settle there.
But you would say then that the threat of Nazism to the Jews was obvious as early as 1933 or 34 when you...
I think so. I think that it was quite obvious what the Nazis were up to. They had clearly proclaimed their program. They had disseminated their propaganda, and they had announced their plans, and their plans included the elimination of the Jews.
Do you feel that what is presently happening in the Mideast is related to what the Jews have learned in recent history?
Oh, yes, most certainly. I think that Jews have learned that they have to defend themselves, that they have to be independent, they have to be strong, they cannot rely on anyone else, they have to stand up in the face of adversity and to resist firmly any attempts made against their survival.
I understand, Mr. Ambassador, that during World War II, you were personally involved in the rescue of Jews from Nazi-occupied countries in Europe and from Arab countries occupied by the Nazis.
Well, I was connected with efforts which were made to strengthen the Jewish resistance movement in Nazi-occupied countries. We sent quite a number of Israelis from Israel to these countries, to Hungary, to Bulgaria, to Romania and other countries, to Austria, not only to strengthen the resistance of the Jews against their deportation and their extermination, but also in order to find ways to bring Jews out by all means available and to guide them to safety. I was reminded of that activity recently when the Bulgarian ambassador to the United Nations, for some reason unknown to me, referred in curious terms to my war record. And I just said to him that my war record included activities which were connected with the strengthening of the resistance movement in his own country against the Nazi oppressors.
Let's talk about the communist countries, Mr. Ambassador. We've spoken of your experiences in Africa, in Asia, in Western Europe, in Israel. I understand that last year you were in Warsaw for a meeting of Israeli ambassadors to East European countries. How did you find the attitude of the communist countries towards Israel at that time?
Well, it was a diversified attitude. I would say there were countries which belonged to the socialist camp, which showed much greater understanding than the main Soviet country, the Soviet Union, and which had developed closer ties in the field of cultural relations and economic relations with Israel. In particular, they cherished the relations with Poland at that time. We saw hopes that relations with other Eastern European countries would favorably develop. In recent months, the relations with Romania particularly improved, so much so that we signed with them a rather comprehensive agreement on scientific and economic cooperation. By the way, Romania is the only Eastern European country which has not broken relations with Israel after the outbreak of hostilities in the Middle East. That is an encouraging sign. It shows the greater degree of objectivity and independence of the Romanian government and the Romanian people, which are judging its own interests and its relations with other countries on their merits.
So, in other words, the attitude of the communist countries towards Israel is by no means monolithic.
No, I think it's not monolithic. I think the very fact that most of the communist countries severed relations with Israel recently, it was certainly due to very heavy pressure exerted on them by the Soviet Union, which apparently did not want to take that step by on its own. But it does not exactly reflect any identity of views and of affinity of all these countries with the viewpoints of the Soviet Union. I am sure that at the United Nations, these countries will take more or less the same line. But judging by the substance of relations which existed until the severance of relations, I would say they were of a different nature, and there were certainly some hopes that relations could improve and could further develop. We still hope that this present period is a temporary disturbance, and when the Soviet Union and the other Eastern European countries will realize the realities of the situation and will come to understand the great error they have made by supporting the aggressive designs of the Arab countries, the aggressive designs which collapsed completely when they were put to the test against Israel. And I assume that these countries are realistic enough and recognize the fact of the situation so that they will come to reassess their position in the months to come.
Only a couple of months ago, you were in the Soviet Union, weren't you, Ambassador Raphael?
Yes, I was sent by my foreign minister to the Soviet Union to have some discussions with, first of all, our ambassador and with high officials in the Soviet government to clarify the positions of both governments on very important questions, particularly concerning the Middle East. I also had an opportunity to visit parts of the Soviet Union, and in particular, I was very glad to spend Pesach, Passover, in Moscow as a guest of our ambassador and to attend the services in the synagogue and to celebrate the Seder, the Passover evening, at our ambassador's embassy, and the second evening as the guest of the chief rabbi in Moscow.
Passover with or without matzahs?
Well, there was matzahs, but there were enough other things which caused quite some anxiety. I remember when I came here to the United States and established my first contact with my colleagues, the ambassadors to the United Nations. I must say, immediately after my visit to the Soviet Union, I also paid a visit to Ambassador Fedorenko, with whom I had some recent exchanges of views, and a man who made monstrous charges against Israel and the Jews. At that time, he was of a different mood, and he was very much concerned to know whether there was matzah in Moscow. I could assure him that that was, at that time, not the problem, but there remained many, many other problems which concerned the Jews very much, unsolved in the Soviet Union. And all my thoughts are now going out to our brethren in the Soviet Union, and we hope that the Soviet Union will not be driven by their most sinister emotions to adopt a policy which towards Jews which would be similar to policies which the Jews had to suffer in the Soviet Union when the Soviet Union and the people of the Soviet Union itself suffered during the somber days of the Stalin regime. Certain emanations and certain sayings and statements made by Soviet representatives here at the United Nations evoke in our memories anxieties that the Soviet representatives apparently are reverting back to policies of that time, which was certainly very, very hard on the Soviet people itself, a part of its leadership, and in particular on the Jews. And we only hope that reason will prevail among the leadership of the Soviet Union, and they will be very, very careful not to aggravate the situation of the Jewish population in the Soviet Union.
Ambassador Raphael, criticism is constantly being leveled at the United Nations, occasionally even by its staunchest defenders. However, most of us remain devoted to the United Nations, and in our hearts wish that it will not only endure, but prevail. What do you think we can do to make it prevail?
Well, you must insist as citizens of free countries that all the nations which are partners in the United Nations should live up to their obligations under the Charter, and they should not only proclaim high principles, but they should pursue practical policies which are in conformity with these high principles. I think I said once that the United Nations is high in principle and low in performance. And we all should work together to increase our performance and to bring it in conformity with our vote objectives of the United Nations Charter.
Our Eternal Light program today was the second of two conversations with outstanding public figures. Our guest was the Honorable Gideon Raphael, permanent representative of Israel to the United Nations. Ambassador Raphael was interviewed by Ruth Sussman of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. If you would like a copy of today's conversation program, please send your name and address with 25 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York, New York, 10027. We invite you to join us next week when the Eternal Light will begin its summer series, The Words We Live By, 15 conversations featuring Mark Van Doren and Maurice Samuel, two of America's foremost men of letters. This year, their subject will be Life and Livelihood in the Bible. This is Vic Roby. The Eternal Light, produced for NBC by Rhoda Grady, is directed by Kenneth McGregor. For the seminary, Dr. Ben Zion Boxer of the Forest Hills Jewish Center is program editor, and Milton E. Krentz, producer. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This pre-recorded program has been an NBC public affairs presentation. Iban, the foreign minister of Israel, will meet the press today on the NBC radio network.